Thank you, Micah. It's very uplifting, very fitting for the time of year that we're in. I was sitting there. You ever have those moments where you think you bit off more than you can chew? I'm having one of those today. I thought you know, we give sermonette, special music. I could sit down. You could just come back up here and do the whole thing today. But no, I appreciate the special music. Just in about the last few months, I'll just go on a side here for a moment. I've started listening to a little more contemporary Christian music, and I'm finding a little bit more upbeat, tempoed stuff, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Last night, we observed Passover, those of us that are baptized members of the church, and tomorrow, as was mentioned in the announcements, will be the first day of unleavened bread. This evening actually starts the days of unleavened bread. And this evening will mark the beginning of the annual Holy Day cycle. It's a special evening in the church. We call it the night to be much observed. I've been thinking a lot about it this past year. It's one of those events that comes around every year that we don't really hear much about. But we keep it every year. Join me in Exodus chapter 12. I'd like to read. We have one verse, basically, that presents to us this day. Exodus chapter 12. We get the name for this evening directly from this scripture as it's translated in the Authorized Version, the New King James. The King James. If you have a New King James, it says it's a night of solemn observance. I'll read it from the King James. It says, "It is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord to be observed of all the children of Israel in their generations." And there we have a simple verse that gives us the name of this evening tonight that we'll be observing. I'm going to emphasize that word through the sermon today because there was a period of time in the church when we called it the night to be much remembered. But we don't find that in Scripture. And I think if you really think about it, you can remember something without observing it. But to observe something is quite different than just remembering it. We don't have any specific instructions on exactly how we're to fulfill this expectation, this requirement, if you will, to observe this night. Over the years, the manner in which people have observed it has changed. There's kind of three predominant ways in which members of the church have kept this night to be much observed. There was a time when the church, when all the members gathered as a congregation. They would find a place, they'd rent a hall, they'd all gather together and keep the night to be much observed together. As the church grew, there would be more logistical challenges with that. You know, my wife and I at one point, and I know Columbus was quite a large congregation back in the day, we also came from a congregation that had 400 and some people. To try to rent a hall for one evening and have a meal became logistically difficult. And so then people started just having it in their homes, and that's still kind of a modern practice today. Just smaller groups gathered together in their homes. Members would invite other members over to their homes. We'd try to get around and make sure that everybody had a place to go to keep that evening. We don't have any of that spelled out for us. It's just been our custom of doing it. And I just say that because there's been occasions when people didn't have a place to go and they felt like somehow they were committing a sin of some type. And I said, no, that is our tradition. That's our custom. That's what we like to do. But we don't want somebody to feel that somehow they're doing something wrong if they haven't gathered in a group. And then another method would be people that would gather in restaurants or a similar type location. Still a smaller group, but in a private room of a restaurant. Each one of those gatherings has its advantages and disadvantages. My wife and I have done all three and continue to kind of, depending on the year and where we're invited or whatever, we've done all three of them. In the first type where the entire congregation would gather together, the advantages it can make for a very special evening. We can all come together and gather around tables and just have a meal and get around and talk to one another. So that certainly has its advantages. A disadvantage is it lacks the amount of intimacy. You know, you may find yourself getting into one conversation that lasts most of the night, and you don't really get around to having a chance to visit with others. So there could be a downside to that as well. Gathering in somebody's home is probably the most intimate. I think probably some of the most special night to be much observed that I've been to is at somebody's home, where it's a smaller group and you can, you know, spend more time just one-on-one conversing. Downside to that, and men, if we're really honest, it puts a big burden on our wives, right? The ladies do a bulk of the preparation when we do it that way. So I set up the tables and make sure we have enough chairs. My job's done. But for the wives, let's be honest, it's a lot of work and it's exhausting. And, you know, in our home, when we've done it that way, typically what we end up doing is the dishes stay till after the first day of unleavened bread's over, just because it's a lot of work. And so that's the disadvantage of doing it that way. It can put a lot of work on the host family. And then gathering in a restaurant at times seems to be the simplest solution. Find a place, get a private room, gather there. Everybody just shows up, pays their own bill, and it seems to be, and certainly can be, the simplest. Now, obviously, the disadvantages in that can be, you know, how private is the room? Sometimes they tell you it's a private room, but with the constant in and out of the waiters and all that, it's not quite as private as you might like it to be. So it has its challenges. Or sometimes they'll have music piped in that we can't do anything about that, it's just there. Or there could be TVs or whatever that can be a distraction. So that can be a downside. But again, over the years, Julie and I have done all three. And I say this not to say that we should say that one is more righteous than the other, right? You'll see as we go through the message today, there's more about the focus of the evening than where we're gathered. Because regardless of where we're actually gathered tonight, it's important that we don't lose focus on the meaning and the purpose of this night. Because as I said, it's over the years, it's been one of those we just sort of skip over. We spend a lot of time talking about Passover. We spend a lot of time talking about the days of unleavened bread and all of the symbology there and coming out of Egypt and putting sin out of our lives. But right between them is this night. And for years, you know, I got to thinking about it last week. I don't remember a message that specifically dealt on this one night. And that's what I want to talk about in the sermon today. I may have shared this story with you before. I'll share it again because it was back in the period of time when it was most often referred to as the night to be much remembered, because it's one I'll never forget. And that is when Julie and I were invited over to another couple's home. There might have been four or five families there. We had a wonderful meal. We're all sitting around the table and, you know, you get into one of those intimate conversations. Julie and I and another couple were there and we're talking. And after a while, you begin to realize, hey, everybody's gone. Where'd everybody go? And so they're off in the other part of the house. So we got up from the table and went into the other room. And they were all gathered around the television because it was March Madness. And Michigan State was in the finals. And I mean, I was speechless. I'm like, so it goes into my category of the night to be most remembered. Least observed, right? I was stunned. I was just shocked. So again, I've never forgot that particular night, but not in a good way. And so today I'd like to discuss the importance of the night to be much observed. I've titled the sermon, Keep Watching, and it'll all make sense as we go through it. So I simply titled it, Keep Watching. I want to read Exodus 12, verse 42 again as we begin. It is a night to be much observed. And that is the word that's used there in the King James. As I said, it has a completely different meaning than just to remember something. And so if there's one thing that maybe we can try to do, because every once in a while I'll slip up and say remembered, but I'm trying to be consistent about what it is called in Scripture, the night to be much observed. It is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord to be observed of all the children of Israel and their generations. And again, as I said in the New King James, it says it's a night of solemn observance. Solemn observance, and that's the phrase that's used in both instances. The word for observed can mean an observance. It's going to be a long day. There was a reason I asked Mr. Waterhouse to do announcements, because I knew I'd be speaking three times, and I'm glad I did. An observance to be much observed. The word only appears twice in the Old Testament, both times right here in Exodus 12:42. We just read them. It's the only two occasions in the Old Testament that this word appears. Zedidi's word study says it means a vigil. It refers to an act in a time of keen observation, a vigilant watchfulness. See, it's much more than just remembering and reflecting back. You know, the interesting thing about what we do as a custom, as God's people, is we, and all of the holy days, we reflect back on former events, and then we look forward into their meaning today. Mr. Gunn did that in the sermonette as he tied those things together. The New English translation says it was a night of vigil for the Lord to bring them out from the land of Egypt. And so on this night, all Israel is to keep the vigil to the Lord. Now, we know words change over time, don't we? Right? Words take on new meanings in how they're used. How many of you would like to be called a vigilante? Right? It's not, right? Because how do they use the word vigilante today, right? Well, in essence, that's what you are tonight. If you just look at the literal definition of the word, the online etymology dictionary for vigil, it's an occasion for devotional watching or observance. It comes from the Old French meaning to watch or to guard, and from the Latin meaning watchful, awake, on the watch, or be alert. In the true sense of the meaning of the word, a vigilante, your neighborhood vigilante, who on the news would be made out to immediately be the bad guy, right? The technical definition is he's the guy who's awake and alert and keep an eye on the neighborhood. That's technically what it is. But we know what they mean when they say it on the news, right? You probably shot and killed somebody. It's sad how words take on new meanings over time. But again, a vigilante actually means that person who keeps a watch or keeps a vigil. And that's what we're to do this evening, a part of what this evening is all about. Exodus 12:42, when it's translated in the English Standard Version, translated, and it has an interesting nuance. It was a night of watching by the Lord to bring them out of the land of Egypt. So the same night is a night of watching kept to the Lord by all the people of Israel. So in the first part, it was basically by God watching over them. And in return, the expectation is that we would then have a vigil on an annual basis. You know, the interesting thing to note is, you know, Passover, which occurred the night before, delivered them from death, right? It was an amazing act of faith. I'll be covering some of this tomorrow, but just think about it. You know, put 100% of your faith in the simple action of putting blood on the lintel and the doorpost and staying indoors. Imagine those are your instructions. Okay, the angel's going to pass over, people, the firstborn are going to die. You want to avoid it, this is all you got to do. Really? That's all you got to do. There's a lot of faith in that. And of course, we understand the spiritual analogy in present day as we put our faith in the shed blood of Jesus Christ. You know, it's interesting because if you think back, we often think of, you know, the death of the firstborn as being children. But it said firstborn. There were people losing their spouses, because if their spouse was a firstborn, they would die. There were, you know, children losing parents, parents losing children. So imagine as you're inside on that night of Passover and all this is going on, but yet they were told by observing that and doing what they're told, they would be saved from death. This night, they're going to be told to get out of Egypt. And that's going to save them from sin, Egypt, which leads them to death. Notice Exodus 12 and verse 31. Mr. Gunn touched on this. He almost covered the whole sermon in a sermonette time, so I appreciate that. There's not a lot of verses to go to, so we're going to hit on some of the same ones. But in the morning after the Passover, they were told here to get out. They feared, the Egyptians did, that they would all be killed if they did not get the Israelites out. So in Exodus chapter 12 And in verse 31, he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, "Rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said." Now, we know here it says that Pharaoh sent for Moses and Aaron, but we have no reason to believe that they actually came to Moses. In fact, we're going to back up in a moment and show that it was prophesied that they wouldn't. And then, in fact, it would be his servants coming to Moses and Aaron to give them this message. Because think about it, what would have happened to Moses and Aaron if they'd have gone out of the house at night when Pharaoh sent them? They would have been killed. So notice, we'll back up to Exodus 10. Let's look at that. Because we appreciate Moses and Aaron did as they were commanded. They put the blood on the lintel and the doorpost. They stayed indoors. So in Exodus 10, notice verse 27. It says, "But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go." And we're going to see here that at the end of this ninth plague, there's this expectation by Pharaoh. Verse 28, he said, "Get away from me, take heed to yourself, and see my face no more. For in the day you see my face, you shall die." And so Moses says, notice in verse 29, "You have spoken well. I will never see your face again." And so here Moses basically prophesies at the end of this ninth plague that, "You're right, you won't see my face again. I won't be before you." So we have reason to believe, based on that, as well as the fact that they were commanded to stay indoors, that Moses and Aaron didn't come before Pharaoh. Oh, he called for them, but most likely he sent his servants to pass that message on. Notice chapter 11, in verse 7, we'll kind of continue on this point that Moses and Aaron didn't actually appear. "But against none of the children of Israel shall a dog move its tongue against man or beast, that you may know that the Lord does make a difference between the Egyptians and Israel. And all these your servants shall come down to me and bow down to me," this is Moses, "saying, 'Get out, and all the people who follow you. After that, I will go out.'" And then he went out from Pharaoh in great anger. So we see here then another prophesied event, right? Your servants are going to come to me and tell me to get out, and as a result, I'm going to do that. And so these two events here in Exodus 10 and also in Exodus 11 help us to see that those events were fulfilled in what we just read in Exodus 12 and verse 31. They did as they were instructed. They put the blood on their doorposts. They stayed indoors. And then Pharaoh's servants came to them and told them to get out. Let's go back now to Exodus 12, and we'll pick it up in verse 32. "Also, take your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also. And the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste. For they said, we shall all be dead. And so the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up in their clothes on their shoulders. Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians." You know, people often think they plundered them as though they robbed them. But if you go back over it carefully, no, they asked of the Egyptians. The Egyptians just wanted them gone at this point. So they asked them for all the stuff, and they were just like, "Here, take it and just get out." You know, take what you want, but just go and leave. And so as we read, it says, then they plundered the Egyptians. Some translations said they borrowed from the Egyptians, which I found interesting because, you know, when I see that, like, they borrowed from them, it's kind of like your neighbor that borrows the rake and you never see it again. Like, we have no record of them giving any of it back, right? So, but again, it does say that they plundered them. Verse 37, "Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 100,000 men on foot besides children, and mixed multitude went up with them." And so if you do some basic math, you take 600,000 men plus their spouses, so you double that number, and their children, and you add in a mixed multitude, as it says here in verse 38, that went up with them. You know, they estimated 2.5 million people. 2.5 million people that would have to be gathered together, organized, and set out in ranks. It says also they took their flocks and their herds. A great deal of livestock is said there in verse 38. Verse 39, "And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves. Now the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on the very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. Which brings us to verse 42. It is therefore a solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations. And so again, as the Passover saved them from death, this was going to save them from Egypt, deliver them out of Egypt, which is sin, which is leads to death. And so one of the things we can take and think about this evening is how, you know, coming out of sin, how that is what leads to death. And so again, they gathered, they put themselves in ranks, and they went out. So when we come together this evening, we should come together and have a meal and to remember that. That just as Israel was brought out of Egypt, it is God who can bring us out of sin. If we are obedient to him and do what he requires of us, he will set vigil over us as he set vigil over Israel. And we then, in return, we do this vigil every year to God. And so on that night, just stop and think, you know, they must have considered as they realized what was happening. Here are your captors all around you, and you've just now borrowed from them, and you've loaded up your all the provisions that you're going to take, and you're just heading out of town. You know, there's a lot of faith in that as well. I mean, just think about, like, I bet somebody was worried that, what if they all suddenly turn on us? And we're in, and they decide to not let us go. And, you know, as people do the math on this, it took, I think, if I remember correctly, one article I read said if you take those 2.5 million people, put them in a column a mile wide, it would take 20-some minutes to just cross one point. You know, it takes a great deal amount of time. And so I'm sure they, as they were heading out, considered what God was doing in their life, based purely on faith, doing what he said to do and following through with it. I think it was a night of great apprehension on their part. I mean, think about our own lives. You know, we get into certain routines, and I don't even mean that in a negative way. Just you got some routine. And just breaking a routine can be a challenge for any of us because you get comfortable with your routine. Whether it's the same route to work or the place you stop and get coffee, whatever it is, it just, you get comfortable with it. And to break any kind of a routine or any kind of a habit can be a challenge. 430 years of living in Egypt, they, like it or not, they knew what they had. And now they were finally given an opportunity in sight of their captors to go to a land promised to their ancestors that they've heard for generation after generation after generation, to leave behind what they had and what they knew, to just go out in faith to a place that they didn't really know where they were going. So I think there was a certain amount of apprehension after living that long in Egypt. So in every generation, and during every annual commemoration of this event, we're told to observe it through keeping a vigil, keeping watch. So how about us today then? How do we do that today? How do we observe this night ahead of us in a manner that's certainly appropriate? Because we don't have a lot of direction. We're not told if we're supposed to use China or not China. We have none of that. And so over the years, we've tried to, you know, extrapolate. How do I make it, you know, the night to be much observed? Well, we, as Paul would say in Galatians, do live in an evil world. It is a world that is ruled by our adversary. You know, one of the things that I think has happened over the past year by our adversary, the best kind of illustration that comes to my mind is, you know, it's like having a piece of glass sitting there, or just even some kind of a glass figurine. You just take a hammer and you smash it and it just shatters. And I think that's what's happened to the church, and because of what's happened, it's just the church is just, and now trying to find all the pieces and bring it back together just takes time. Right? It's going to take time. But, you know, that's where we're at, and we're moving forward as best we can. So how do we look at what's happening in our world today and move forward? Because being alert, being vigilant are vitally important lessons. That is the lesson of this evening, is keeping watch, staying awake, staying alert, being aware. If you're not sure how rapidly our world is changing, and I'm sure we all are, we could debate how quickly we think it's changing, but you know, just this past week, I'll share one article that was in the news. In Somerville, Massachusetts, area I know, having been in New England, been through there on many occasions, it's just northwest of Boston. This past week, their city council unanimously passed a domestic partnership policy, which recognizes polyamorous relationships as being on par with marriage. Polyamorous meaning any number of adults can enter into a relationship and it will have the same status as marriage in the city of Somerville, Massachusetts. So you could have two guys and a woman, three women, four guys, whatever, decide to go into a polyamorous relationship and adopt the child and raise a child. And they've determined that's totally legal. One of the things I found most interesting, it was probably one of the most truthful statements by a city council member, and I don't think he even knew what he was saying, because this is a man that voted in favor of this. His direct quote was, "I don't feel it's the place of government to define a family." And I said, "You're absolutely right, but you just did. I mean, by passing this, because God defined a family, but by passing this, you've redefined it." So again, I don't think he even understood what he was saying. Why should this matter? Here's an example of you read something in the news, why should that matter? Well, because just like the Supreme Court redefined marriage in our country, it started at a local level with a local ordinance that was challenged in the courts, and as it made its way up, because again, if I live in Columbus, Ohio, I say, well, if they can do that in Somerville, Massachusetts, why can't it do it here? I'm gonna sue. And then the courts get involved and say, oh yeah, if it's okay there, then it's okay here. And then pretty soon the Supreme Court says, yeah, you can't discriminate in that regard. So it is the kind of thing that's going on right before our eyes. We need to be watching and praying and being aware of. Our world is changing rapidly right before our eyes. There's ample instruction for us in Scripture to be watchful. Join me in Matthew 24. Jesus spoke often of that principle of being watchful. Matthew 24. You know, again, as I reflect upon all the years of keeping the night to be much observed, and as I said, I've kept all the different types and formats. Each one, there's been great conversations. There's been some where we couldn't seem to get it on the right page. You know, it just the conversations never seemed to get where they needed to be. And so it really takes all of us working together to try to keep that night focused on what's most important. In Matthew 24, we're going to look at a few examples of Jesus Christ speaking on this principle of being watchful and being ready. We'll begin in verse 36. These are quite familiar passages to us. It begins by saying in verse 36, "But of the day and the hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be." And so he's going to go on then to describe as it was in the days of Noah. And we've talked about this in the past. He's not talking about sin. Right, the things that we're going to read here are just living life. We'll just read what it says. Verse 38, "For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark." So it's like you and I getting up Monday morning and going to work. We're just going through life. There's nothing evil being spoken of. It's just people were going on with life and just not being aware of what was going on around them. Like, I think about this all the time. Like, you don't see the big boat. Nobody's picking up on the big boat being built over here, but they're just going on through life. "And did not know until the flood came," verse 39, "and took them all away, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be." Verse 40. "Then two men will be in the field. One will be taken and another left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and the other left." Verse 42, watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, verse 43, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allow his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour you do not expect. And so here in verse 42, watch therefore, it means to watch, or to be vigilant, to be awake, to be alert, pay attention. And that's what he's telling us to do. You know, no one knows the exact day or the hour, but we should see what's on the horizon and be aware of the direction things are moving. Next chapter over, as I said, we'll look at a few examples of Jesus Christ's words here. The parable of the 10 virgins, which we're very familiar with. We won't bother revisiting the whole parable. Notice the final words at the end of that parable in verse 13. Matthew 25, again, the same admonition, to watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. And so he again makes that plea and that appeal that we would be watchful and alert and vigilant. And that is the meaning of this night. Every year as we revisit it, we should understand that is a clear message of this evening. One of the more interesting occurrences is found over in Matthew chapter 26. Matthew 26, prior to Jesus' trial, his crucifixion, he goes to the Garden of Gethsemane where he's going to go to a private place in order to pray. Matthew 26, we'll begin in verse 36. And then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to the disciples, sit here while I go and pray over there. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed. And then he said to them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me. He went a little farther and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And then he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, what? Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, verse 41. Lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Let's continue on. I'll come back to that one in a moment. Again, a second time he went away praying, saying, O my Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And so he left them, went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. And then he came to his disciples and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand. You know, three times in this section, he asks Peter and James and John to watch with me. Stay awake, stay alert, be vigilant. And they couldn't. Each time he returned, as we read, they were asleep. In verse 41, he pleads with them earnestly, watch and pray, he says, lest you enter into temptation, because our spirit is willing, but our flesh is weak. I mean, let's make this personal. Our spirit, we desire to do the right things, but our flesh is weak. We don't always do it. And that was what he was saying. Look, we can have all the right intentions in the world, but our flesh is weak. And so we have to be on guard and not fall asleep, but to watch and be vigilant. The word watch that's spoken in each of these instances comes from a Greek word, Gregorio, and it's used in the sense of keeping awake or spiritual alertness. That's really what he was telling them. It wasn't about physical alertness, it was spiritual. Spiritual alertness. Be aware of what's going on in the world around you and in your life. His instruction here is to prevent us from falling into temptation and becoming diverted by distractions. You know, it never ceases to amaze me how every year, leading up, definitely before Passover, and even usually right before the fall holidays, some major distraction comes into life. You know, I had an issue popped up this week, and my wife gets the worst of it. I just kind of vented on her. I'm like, I can't believe this. Like, it wasn't a major thing, but it was like, I totally know where this is coming from. It's our adversary. I don't have time for this right now. right? So like even when we know where it's coming from, it still can get to us, right? So I had to go pray about it and just calm down, deal with it and move on. But you've experienced it. How many of you, you know, it's right before the Passover and Days of Unleavened, or it's right before getting ready to go to the feast, and something breaks down at work, and someone goes, yeah, no, you can't go, man. It's like, what? And it always is right before that, right? The feast, right before the holy days, it always is that way. It used to happen to me when I was an IT director. It's like everything hums along great all year long, and then right before the feast, the servers decide to shut down. I'm like, come on. It's our adversary. We've got to remember that's where it's coming from, because he wants us to get frustrated and distracted and maybe even not do what we know we should do. Right? So we have to be aware of those things. It doesn't make them easier when you're going through them, but we got to understand where they're coming from. Jesus' admonition here is stay awake, stay alert, know what's going on. Don't fall into temptations and distractions that'll get us off base. You know, the night to be much observed, connects Passover of Exodus 12 and the New Testament Passover. God, as I said, led Israel out of Egypt after telling them to keep a vigil, right? Passover, the New Testament, the night that Jesus betrayed, he told his disciples to watch. It's a lesson for us. You know, the interesting thing here is that Jesus is telling this after he had just kept Passover with his disciples. We keep the night to be much observed after we've kept Passover. So after he had Passover with the disciples, he sits down and tells them to be vigilant, to watch. And so we, in essence, are repeating that same pattern as we do Passover, and then we do night to be much observed, the same pattern that he did with his disciples. We're going to do the Passover, and I'm going to remind you to watch and stay alert and be vigilant. And so in essence, we're almost repeating those same lessons. And so tonight, as we enter into the nighttime portion of the 15th of Nisan, there are several things we should probably consider about being watchful, being vigilant. Let's go to Acts chapter 20. We're going to look at a few occasions in the New Testament where admonitions were given to the church about being watchful, being alert, being vigilant. Paul here is writing about those, or warning about those who would be drawn out of the church. Those in the church that would draw others out, following after their own destructive heresies or doctrines. Acts 20, verse 29, we'll begin there. For I know this, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. Also from among yourselves, men will rise up, speaking perverse things, to draw away the disciples after themselves. Therefore, watch and remember that for 3 years I did not cease to warn everyone night and day with tears. So there is that, again, these things will happen. The responsibility is on each one of us individually to watch, be aware, and be alert for these things so that we don't get drawn in to these things that would potentially draw us out or cause confusion. 1 Corinthians 16, at the close of Paul's first epistle to the church at Corinth, right at the end of 1 Corinthians, look at one verse there. 1 Corinthians 16, look at verse 13. It's right at the conclusion of this letter. As he begins his final exhortations and closes out the letter, we'll just read verse 13. Watch. Here's that same word again, be vigilant, be alert, be on guard, watch. Stand fast in the faith, be brave, and be strong. You know, that's an admonition to the church that still applies today. Because again, this past year has put a lot of fear into people. Sometimes irrational and unbalanced. But nonetheless, it has. And it's had its impact on the church, and the church is recovering from it. Our society, in fact, is really recovering from it in that regard. We're going to have to be strong and courageous going forward. You know, things aren't going to get easier. I covered that a few weeks back, maybe a month or so. You know, we're going to have to be ready to endure persecution if that's what we have to endure. So again, you know, we need to be, as he says here, to watch, be alert, be vigilant, but stand fast, be brave, and be strong. I have more to say about that in the sermon tomorrow. We have to understand we live in a world that is hostile towards anybody that's trying to obey God. Let's go to 1 Peter 5. Right now, in one sense, the fact that we're small as a church, as a denomination, if I can use that term, you know, the Church of God is small in comparison to most religions. We know that. Sometimes feel sad about that. We wish we were bigger, right? We wish there were more people. We hope that God would call more, and we could fill this room up and start working on an addition. Mr. Hopkins can build the addition. I did the little room over there. You can do the addition. I mean, we have that. There's a part of us that would like to see that, if that's God's will. But, you know, there's some blessings and protection by being small and unknown, which we should not, like, take lightly either, because if things do get off the rails and they start seeking out people to persecute, it's kind of okay to not be that big and that known. And a familiar passage here in 1 Peter chapter 5, we'll begin in verse 8. Peter writes about, you know, the realities of being vigilant against the source of it all, our adversary. 1 Peter 5, verse 8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. But may the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory, by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered a while, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you. To him be the glory and the dominion forever and ever. Amen. You know, there's many powerful lessons we can learn through the period of time we call the spring holy days, really all of the holy days, but the spring holy days is there upon us now, especially with the Passover, this night to be much observed ahead of us in the days of unleavened bread. As we review them and discuss the events in the pages of our Bible, we can, you know, certainly look at what God did for Israel. That's probably going to come up this evening in your conversations, and it's certainly fitting to reflect upon what he did as he watched over them. But we should also look at what God is doing for us today, what he has done for us today, as he's also delivered us from sin and from the death penalty through faith in that shed blood of Jesus Christ. This evening, the night to be much observed, begins the first holy day. As I said, it's one of those that we've often just kind of jumped over. Like, we do it, but like, we've never really paused to. And over the years, as a result, I've seen people try all different kinds of things to try to bring significance to it and meaning to it, well-intentioned. But we do live in a world that's full of evil, and we know that truth and righteousness and those things are far from the minds of most people. But as we come together, we have an opportunity tonight to make really good use of this evening. So what then is the lesson for us? Stay vigilant is really what it comes down to. Keep watching. I think that's the simplest lesson of the night, is that we just remember that we're admonished to stay vigilant. Don't let our guard down. Don't relax. Know who our adversary is. You know, there have always been challenges in the church, some that are more disruptive than others, others that are just maybe squabbles between a few people. There's always been challenges. I mean, we got a diverse group of personalities that God has called and, you know, put us all together. So there's going to be those type of things. But we always got to remember where it's coming from. As I said, our adversary would love nothing more than just to totally disrupt everything. You know, we've managed okay in the past year, right? We're getting through it. And I think that's something we should, you know, at least appreciate. Notice an admonition given to the church in Sardis over in Revelation chapter 3. I'm going to begin to wind down here. Revelation chapter 3. We'll begin in verse 1, Revelation chapter 3. And to the angel of the church in Sardis write, these things says he who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know your works, that you have a name, that you are alive, but you are dead. Be watchful, there's that word again, and strengthen the things which remain, You know, we could pause this evening and think about all the positive things that have gone on in our life this year and strengthen those things. I know I've hammered the Hebrews 10, 24, and 25 all year long, you know, but we need to come together for the purpose of stirring up love and good works. And that's what it means. Strengthen what remains. Look at the positive. Build on that and move forward in that manner. Strengthen the things that which remain that are ready to die, for I have not found your works perfect before God. So he even hints at the fact that if you don't strengthen, these things are going to die off. Remember, therefore, how you have received and heard. Hold fast and repent. Therefore, if you will not watch, I will come upon you as a thief, and you will not know what hour I will come upon you. He says, you have a few names, even in Sardis, who have not defiled their garments. And they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father, before his angels. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. So the admonition to us here is quite simply to be watchful, as it says in verse 2. Be vigilant, to be alert, strengthen what we have. Build upon what you have. Strengthen those things. And he says, though, in verse 3, if you don't, he'll come upon us like a thief in the night. So let me give you some final recommendations maybe for this evening. You know, I thought, you know, the idea of speaking on this only came to me early last week as I was realizing that there's not much said about the night too much observed. And as I was going through this, I thought I probably should have done this a couple weeks ago, but it is what it is. I'm not asking anybody to modify anything. We should begin our meal at sundown or just before sundown. We should be eating, actually, you should eat the majority of your meal after sunset. If you eat it before, you're eating on Passover day, not on the night to be much observed. The night to be much observed begins at sunset. So you should try to time that so you're eating the majority of that meal on the night to be much observed, which begins at sunset. We should keep our conversation, you know, on the things of God is about the best definition I can give it, right? No politics, no mask mandates, right? I think we've beat that one to death, right? We're going to have a mask burning out here one day. I don't want to say when. Maybe it's 2 years from now. I don't know, right? But when we come together tonight, right, no politics, masks, vaccines, and no March Madness, please. Like, I've been down that road, right? We can talk about the things of God, right? That's what brought us together tonight, wherever you're going to be. It's because of God. That's why we're there. We should consider and talk about and think about and strengthen the things that remain, whatever that may be. Maybe that'd be a fun discussion tonight. What are the things that we could strengthen? What do we have that we could strengthen and build upon that we already have? And I've already mentioned Hebrews 10, 24, so I won't mention it again, although I just did. So, some traditions that people have, some people like to go around the room and discuss, you know, when did God call you? How did you first hear about the truth? What was the first inkling you had that you were seeing things differently, that maybe it was this point where God began to work with you? Those are fun and exciting stories to share because it's different for everybody, and it's nice to hear those. Now, I'll say that with a word of caution. There was once when I was a teenager. Again, this was my unconverted days. Right? Give me a break. We're doing this at our home, and we decided to go around the table and do that. And I started doing the math, right? The first guy went 22 minutes. I'm like, oh, man, we're going to be here all night. Like, you know. Okay, that was my unconverted self. So, again, you want to do it with some, like, you know, let's have everybody get two. You got 2 minutes. Let's go around the table, 2 minutes, right? So, again, you want to have fun with it. You know, you still want to enjoy the evening. But if you decide to do that, I mean, understand that can also take a while. So, but those are fun things to share when people can share. Or maybe it was like, when did you have that aha moment to get baptized? Like, there's been people who have been in the church their whole life, and all of a sudden they're 62, and it hits them. Like, those are even interesting stories. Those are things that can be talked about as well. And we can certainly discuss the events around Passover, you know, both the Old Testament and the New Testament. Something that's been common over the last several years, or I guess decade or so, as social media has become popular, I'm not a big fan of it. It's the, you know, the social media posts of this is our nightly much observed. That's just a personal thing for mine. I try to keep it a solemn observance and try not to, you know, make it too big of a deal out of it. But again, whatever you want to do to keep it focused on the night and what's relevant, the fact that it is a vigil, something we should be observing. You know, as it should be obvious to us now, God has a reason for everything. Right? There's a reason, I believe, that he started off the annual holy day cycle by bringing his people together to have a meal. Now, again, that's just our custom, how we do it. But I think it's important that we come together before we start on this annual cycle, this journey again, to be reminded that we're a family, especially those that were baptized who just partook of the bread and the wine, and that we should come together and start out sitting down and strengthening what remains. Build upon those things going forward. I'm going to close in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, if you would please join me there. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Again, as I said, of all the years of keeping the night to be much observed, I can only think of one or two occasions when it was less than what I expected. Sometimes could it be more? Sure, but anytime we can get together with brethren, share a meal, share what we have in common, and build one another up, it's always a good thing. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. I'm going to conclude by reading beginning of verse 1. But concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains on a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. You are all sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Verse 6, therefore let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober.